Tell me something. How did you know? I mean, who the hell told you?
History. Nikolai. 15 years ago, I walked into this bank just like you are now. That makes you good. Because I was the best. But now you feel like a mark, don't you? You think you're sold out. You're on a trust.
And you, Antiguado? Eh? Can you trust? No one. You are alone. Same as me.
It's Revenge of the 90s time. We are talking today about a movie that I don't know if many of us who listen to the podcast or enjoy 90s movies have seen to some extent. This feels like a movie just sort of like, I don't know, just exists would be kind of my way to describe it.
Yes, I didn't really realize it existed.
No. I chose this movie because I saw some people talking about it on Twitter. Film Twitter is a wonderful place sometimes. And I saw people talking about it and I was like, oh, that damn, like the poster is fucking Sylvester Stallone and Antonio Banderas and it's called Assassins. I need to learn more. So yeah. Then I'm like, wait a minute. It's a Richard Donner film. And also it's a script from the Wachowskis. And
a lot of things we love.
And there was like, there's a lot going on here. Then I very quickly realized as I was watching this and I saw Antonio Banderas's hair, I went, is this what I think it is? And it turns out I was right. This is the movie. The thing I can guarantee you know from this movie, if you're like, what the hell is Assassins? What 1995 movie is this? 1995 ass film is this, because it's very mid 90s. This thing you've seen is this movie spawned the Antonio Banderas computer gif of him biting his finger in whatever joyous thing he's looking at on the computer. So you've seen some of Assassins.
I've used it countless times. It's one of the great, you know, to probably top 25 gifts time.
Yeah.
Very, very, very flexible usage. And I saw the hair and I was like, I think this is going to be it. And then I see his outfit and I'm like, oh, this is it.
Okay, yeah. When he takes a shower, cause like at the beginning of the movie, his hair is in a different way. And then I think like sometime halfway through the film, I don't know if like Banderas got like a haircut or what, but like he does something with his hair that's totally different. And you're like, oh, okay, yes, that is it.
Maybe and he was filming like Desperado because like his hair looks very different later in the movie.
Right, completely different second half of the film. But the scene itself is awesome because he also makes this crazy little noise when he's doing it where he's like, ooh. And it's just like,
it's insane.
It's actually pretty emblematic of like his character in this, as the foil to Stallone, as Miguel Bane to Sylvester Stallone's Robert Rath, which are just two great assassin names, just the most ridiculous 90s assassin names that I absolutely love. Antonio Banderas is having the time of his life in this. If I had to tell you a reason to watch Assassins, because it would be kind of difficult to make a case because this is like 2.5 hours long. It's not
so long.
And like it, I think this movie's trying to be like a commentary on like, oh, what if a hitman had a heart, man? Like, what if?
Yeah.
And a part of me is just kind of like, no, I'd actually prefer the original script that the Wachowskis wrote that was just like a violence fest. Could I have that one instead of Stallone having a conscience and being like this sort of like pure of heart assassin and not wanting to kill anybody? That would, you know, I can see why the Wachowskis wanted to take their names off of the script and the WGA said no. So like by no... through no desire of their own. The Wachowskis are attached to this film because it apparently deviates pretty far from what their original script was.
Yeah.
But this was also how Joel Silver got to know the Matrix script that he bought. So who knows where the Matrix would be if it wasn't for this film. So we have that at least.
It is interesting.
It's kind of cool.
The revolving doors of everything of like, if this movie doesn't get made, then maybe we never get the Matrix, which very much changes the trajectory of movie making going into the 2000s. Maybe it happens 4 or 5 years later and we don't get Keanu and it just isn't a hit. Like it's remarkable.
It is funny to think this middling sort of assassin movie really presents like the through line is at least like the starting point of the trajectory that filmmaking goes over the next 5 to 10 years. So it's kind of fun when you see it in that lens.
It is. Yeah.
And there
is a lot to like about it. Like, the pacing of this movie is insane, though. I will say it is the most bizarrely paced movie I've seen. And it's a little bit hard to watch all in one sitting because it's pretty long and it doesn't follow a lot of the ordinary beats of like a traditional action movie.
That's true. Yeah, it's a lot of like little vignettes. And I would say that the only movie that's ever matched the amount of silenced guns firing was like John Wick. Remember that scene in John Wick when him and Common are walking
in that tunnel?
It's great. But like, I feel like this movie was the genesis of assassins firing silenced weapons at each other because they do it constantly and in front of other people where they're always firing their silencers.
Yes.
And so, anyway, it's just silly. But to your point on trying to watch this, I had to watch this in like 3 sittings. But unlike you, I got Under the Wire on Amazon Prime. So it turns out when you rent something on Amazon Prime, you get the 48-hour window.
Right.
And it'll tell you when the rental ends. But that's just to start it. So my rental ended at 10 o'clock on a Thursday. All I had to do was start it before then to be able to finish the last 45 minutes that I had to watch. And so I forced my wife to watch the last 45 minutes with me. She was totally checked out on it and did not care in the least about this film.
Yeah.
Even when Nikolai shows up, which only makes me question more things in this movie. But
it makes no sense.
No sense.
But we'll go,
zero sense.
We'll go with it.
So we'll get to that in a second. But I got Under the Wire, so I didn't have to pay more than my $2.99. Whereas you, on the other hand, it sounds like...
I spent $9 on this movie because we originally were going to record it last week. I watched an hour of it. Then you're like, hey, man, can we push it? And then I was like, you know what? Sure, I'll just buy it again. And I just I actively avoided it. And then on Sunday, I purchased it stupidly. I don't know like why. And then I started watching it. I had like the kids were doing something and I was like, okay, I'll watch this. But Sunday's also Mother's Day and Succession was on and it was not a priority. And then I forgot on Monday and then realized, oh shit, I need to watch this movie. So then yesterday I had to purchase it again to watch the final like 55 minutes of this movie. And I finally got it done. And I was really mad at myself about the amount of money I wasted on this movie. Yeah.
I like that you bought it a second time and didn't watch 1 second of it.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I watched enough to make it like start my countdown clock. Like I rewound it to the part I thought I was at and I didn't remember any of the thing that happened. And I realized I fell asleep during part of it. So I had to rewind it further. And I rewatched that scene with the scene with Julianne Moore and Stallone with the cat where she holds the gun on him. Like probably I've seen that scene like 10 times. Like I couldn't get past that scene.
Couldn't get past it. Right. Well, it's like the indictment there is that Stallone just sleepwalks his way through this movie. I don't understand the performance.
Energy. It's crazy. It's very weird.
You and I are some of the biggest Stallone lovers that are out there.
I love him, yeah.
He's my guy. But it was a weird choice to equate being a hitman with a conscience and then that meaning that you're just going to be like a statue the whole movie. Like, he brings no juice to this movie whatsoever. And I don't know if it was because like they moved to this mentality where he plays a hitman trying to get out. So his thing is like, I'm going to do one more job and then I'm gone. And he keeps typing his contracts with like this unknown boss through like an internet server or whatever. And this only brings up more questions later, but we'll get, you know, whatever. But, you know, there's this one last contract and he's going to take it. He's going to get the money. He's going to get out. So he seems to, you know, he actively hates being a hitman now after having to kill his mentor, Nikolai, 15 years ago. And he's just been putzing around as a hitman ever since. But he was the best, they say. And so he goes to kill this guy at a funeral, and Antonio Banderas is there and does the job for him. But in the middle of this funeral, there's like silencers going off, and yet nobody like knows what's happening. Cause like
there's security guards there too, and they're just useless.
In movies, silencers are like dead silent and nobody can hear anything. So, there's like this really amazing gunfight in the cemetery between Stallone and Banderas, which leads to a pretty cool car chase scene, which like kind of is like the, like when I was watching it about 30 some minutes in, there's like this really great scene where Stallone tracks Banderas down in the cabs of the city because like he knows he's going to try and fly out of this country or whatever. And they have this cool exchange in the cab. Because Miguel Bain was like a big fan of Rath's, you know, and so there's great juice between the two. And I was like, well, this movie might be good as hell. This might be an underrated movie that I just, you know, never saw. And maybe this would be sweet. And then really the movie just dies after that. There's not, aside from like some pretty cool explosions that they do, like, you know, like any good 90s movie, there's giant fireball explosions happening all over the place, and those are fun. I'll always appreciate those. But man, does this movie lose it after that like first interaction between Stallone and Banderas, and it's unfortunate that it kind of just like falls off there and nobody except Banderas seems to be enjoying themselves, because like it did have promise, man. Like you can't it's like Banderas Stallone is legit. That's a great pairing. But like, how do you mess up a movie where they're assassins going after each other? I don't get that.
Well, one of the problems is that scene is a scene you need 90 minutes into the movie where it's like, oh my God, these two guys who have been playing cat and mouse, who don't really know what the other look like, they're finally meeting. And that's like the big moment. Instead, it's like, oh, well, that's ruined some of the suspense. Like, now they know what each other's other looks like. They've had this exchange together. And, you know, like, you can only have so many shootouts between the two characters before you're just kind of like, okay, I'm good. And you get like four or five shootouts. And granted, they're all like fairly well done. Some of them are legitimately awesome, like the cab sequence is great, the funeral sequence is great, but it kind of gets a little bit stale. The set pieces become a little more until you get to the very end of the movie, there aren't enough side characters either. It's literally like he spends 30 minutes in the bank just like kind of sitting and waiting.
Yeah, and that's the climax of the movie.
Yes, it's Antonio Banderas staring into the sun being super sweaty and getting annoyed that he can't see his sniper mark anymore. And Sylvester Stallone sitting in a bank in a comfortable chair waiting to get money. Like, what are you doing with your action stars? What?
Yeah, you give not, and this is, it's fine that you give her stuff to do, which is fantastic. I'm glad that she has, like, you know, something to do in this. But Julianne Moore is doing the most action in that climax, like running to get the gun and like hanging from the thing and hiding and everything. Like in that sequence, she's the one doing the action where you've completely sidelined Antonio Banderas and Stallone.
Just like the poster promises.
These two will hardly do anything at the end.
Like, it's crazy.
And I love Julianne Moore in this. She's great.
Oh yeah.
And always has been, always will be. Her character is like a hacker, you know, that has like a disc that does something that people want.
Tell us.
I don't. Beats me.
Tell us it has nuke codes. Oh, so you mean like if it got into the wrong hands, they could blow up the world instead of it just being like, this is an important floppy disk. Sure, I'll take your word for it.
I don't need anything else there. That's fine. Like, what? At least like when movies give us those, like, you know, those things that, what is it, MacGuffin, where it's just like
the knock list. Like,
yeah, the knock list.
Very important.
Right. I need you to take me just a little step further. And just tell me like what it is so that I can be like, oh, okay. Yeah, people are going to die if this gets into the wrong hands. Instead, it's just like, well, there's some addresses or something on this. I don't know. Who knows? It's encrypted. That's always the excuse. Oh, I don't know. It's encrypted. Okay.
Wouldn't it make sense, spoiler, that like the guy who's doing the contracts is the guy who was supposedly, he was Stallone's mentor, who he supposedly killed, who comes back. Wouldn't it make sense if maybe the disc had the decoded, like, actual names and addresses of all the assassins that are, like, within this organization so he can find them and kill them all? Like, maybe that's why he wants it. That's there. I've directly, like, brought everyone who's in this movie together for like why they don't want that list to get out, and then Banderas finds out what's on it and kind of helps them kill the contractor.
Yeah,
that all makes sense then. Instead of just like how is that, like, how was that not even discussed? And maybe, you know, and that might be a symptom of like movies, because Mission Impossible comes out the next year, and I think you see a noticeable like, okay, like we need to tell you like how important the thing we are coveting, mm-hmm, or the thing that we need to keep out of the enemy hands is, because you don't really actually get a whole lot of that other than like, you know, this submarine's headed toward this port and it's going to, mm-hmm, like blow up where the president is. But with things like that technology, you didn't really ever get it was still new. And I think it was still confusing for people.
That's a good point. And this movie definitely is asking you to just go along for the ride, because it's the old guard where, like, if you put on a movie poster just Stallone, right? If you just put the name, you'd be like, well, I'm in. It doesn't really matter what it is.
Exactly.
I don't even need to know. So, and Banderas was young, but, you know, he's got the juice. You know he does. So, yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, I would even have so much sex with Banderas. When he puts on his backwards hat and he's just like ready to snipe.
When he's sweating. Yeah, when he sweats for 35 minutes. Yeah.
And when we say he's up there all day, he gets in the tower at 9 a.m. when the bank opens. Stallone is in the bank from 10 a.m. until 7 p.m.
And they like make you feel that. Like there's like there's eight different times they check back in with Stallone in the bank. And then there's a moment where Banderas like takes a break and goes into the bank to have a conversation with Stallone.
Are you still in the bank? Yeah, I'm waiting for my money. Okay, I'm gonna go back to the tower and wait to kill you.
Right.
Cool.
All right, awesome. And then like at no point does Banderas think like, boy, this is kind of strange. Like, I wonder if he's got some sort of plan here. He just goes back to the thing.
Yeah, he's not. And if he didn't have a plan, maybe he'll devise a plan, knowing I'm just waiting to kill him when he gets out.
Knowing that I'm here, knowing, because you have to know that Stallone would know that you're going to be going at the same spot where he was 15 years ago, because that's been the entire point of your back and forth, is that you do everything he does. So, like, what? God. Yeah, there's a lot in this where it's like you should easily have shaved off 30, 40 minutes. And like, maybe the Wachowski, it's so funny too, that when they made this movie, the Wachowskis didn't have the name recognition, obviously. And I think it was like Richard Donner insisted that the script be rewritten to tone down the violence. To tone down the violence? You're making a movie about assassins that are going after each other. I want to see the violence. The Wachowskis, it's hilarious that you see it, like when with the Matrix, is that like clearly they understood action cinema. Like they understood it in a way, and not, no offense to Richard Donner, but like they understood it in a way that was like revolutionary. I think they should have gone with the original script, whatever it was, because I think then you'd have been talking about like a classic 90s movie where Stallone's playing a cool ass hitman instead of like a moping one. I don't need to see him moping around. No, thank you. I love that he likes to play against type sometimes, but sometimes you do need to lean into it a little bit.
Yeah, I think that when Stallone's at his best, he has lots of energy. And there are definitely movies where it's just like he was there for the paycheck. Like he just comes and like mutters his lines, and it's just very noticeable that this is a, we're not getting A-level Stallone here. And I don't know. I just find these mid-90s action movies very interesting, when just how much better things become in 3-4 years. Like The Matrix comes out 4 years after this movie. And looks 10,000 times better than this movie. Mission Impossible, granted, Mission Impossible is directed by Brian De Palma, comes out a year later and looks so much better than this movie and does so much stuff better and more interesting than this movie. And so it's just like, I don't really get it. Like, I know it's a budget thing. I know when you have tons of rewrites, but it's just fascinating to me how you can have movies made within 5 years that look like they're made decades apart.
That is such a great point. It's always really obvious when those movies are on like the precipice of what eventually becomes the new method of filmmaking for a genre or something. Like, you'd have to think back to maybe some of the action movies that had been coming out 5 years before, like John Wick, you know, to say, it's like, oh, we could have been doing action this whole time like this.
Yeah.
Or the same way Mission Impossible proved, like, oh, we could have been doing like spy caper stuff this well. Okay. So it is interesting, because it's probably somewhat unfair to assassins, because you don't know you're like at the end of an era until the next era begins.
Totally.
And
fair.
I think they were just making what felt like a classic star driven type of vehicle. And there wasn't much else paid attention to in regards to, you know, could we innovate something here? Is there something, you know, are we trying to like push like the genre forward? Like, really, like the biggest question of assassins is like, what exactly are we trying to do here?
What's our goal?
What's the goal? What would rev me up to make this movie? And it sure as hell wouldn't be making Sylvester Stallone a moping assassin. The thing that like really gets me going is like Antonio Banderas clearly got the memo of like how you should approach this film as the villain. You know, and even like when was Cliffhanger was in 93, but and even like Cliffhanger was 2 years before this, and it looks a billion times better.
Yes.
You know, Rennie Harlan made what a movie that felt like it was like in another world at the time.
I know this movie suffers from so many different set pieces because they do a few of them super well. And like, I think the final standoff is like really interesting in this Puerto Rican bell tower bank. Like, that's cool. Like, it's a cool and different set that you don't usually get, but you have like 50 minutes in the middle of the movie where it is just like any city USA generic action chase sequence through apartment buildings and nothing wholly unique or special. But at the very beginning of the movie, you have these really great sequences in the cab and in the cemetery, but just like half the movie just could be put into any action movie. And there's nothing, you know, there isn't a world that's created here. And all the movies you've been talking about, they are very specific worlds. The Matrix, a very specific world. John Wick, very specific world. Cliffhanger, even though it's a singular entity, I know they're making a sequel now, but in its own specific world, you're on the mountain the whole time. It is a very specific tone, themes, set. Like, it's all consistent.
It's you a lived-in world. It's a lived-in exactly. world. Yes. And that, I know that's hard. Well, I mean, it's like, I know it's difficult to do that with like assassins, right? You know, you've got some nameless boss giving you out contracts and, you know, you don't really understand. It's like, is this really what contract killing's like? I don't know. But John Wick nailed it to be like, here's this whole world we kind of create, you know, to make you feel exactly. like you're a part of it. Make you feel like you're a part of something going on, is like a lived in entity. And yeah, you're totally right that this sort of just muddles along in obscurity and anonymity throughout pretty much most of the movie. And the one set piece that really kind of got me was there was like the big moment where you're introduced to Elektra, Julianne Moore, or like her big first set piece where she's like got the disc, the indescribable disc that she is going to sell to some like Dutch buyers.
Yeah.
And so they set up the four Dutchmen. They set this buy up at a hotel and she's in a different room connected by the vents or whatever. And she, you know, they come in or whatever. Antonio Banderas gets there. Stallone is there. And there's like these really weird sequences where like Miguel Bane's just like walking through the halls of the hotel, like killing people like in the hallways indiscriminately. And I understand that like you learn that these are like, and then he breaks into the room where the Dutchman are and he kills them. And you learn like they're Interpol agents. And yeah. It's like, then nothing happens with that. They could, what do I care that they're Interpol agents? Nothing happens from that. It's just like this.
Interpol then theoretically want to be involved in this later.
Especially since like 8 of their agents were just killed.
Yes.
How is there not like a, like you mentioned about side characters, how is there not like an Interpol side character who's like, I better get to the bottom of this, that like we were just slaughtered. All my agents were just killed.
Yeah, a big baddie who's like, he's technically a good guy, but like he's going after both the assassins and then the assassins work together. Like, that's way more interesting. You just like anything, they track him to, so like he has this plan, but it gets immediately blown up because, you know, Interpol works with, I don't know, the local officials to, well, they wouldn't have to. Well, they would, because if they're in Puerto Rico, they would be under like US territory. So they work with like the CIA. And so now you have the CIA is involved. Oh my gosh. But it's like, oh yeah, we're cool. They just killed several of our agents. Wait. What city were they in? They had to be in a foreign city if Interpol's involved.
Oh yeah, at the like hotel?
Yeah, they had to be in like Europe.
Right. See, that's completely nameless, indiscriminate like locations that they operate in this movie. I mean, doesn't really seem to want to take the time to That is like, I think it's like, I don't want to like totally label it this way because I don't think it's like absolutely this, but it's like fairly lazy.
It is. It's very lazy.
You know, there's just a lot to this where nobody wanted to take the time to think through a character's motivations or even what you're, even where you're filming or what, like I said before, what's the drive of this, you know? And so that now that I think back, it's like, well, there's a reason why nobody's really ever seen Assassins or talks much about it, because it's sort of just like one of those movies where it had all the potential in the world and you sort of just are left slightly disappointed. I mean, there's like a few things. It's never a bad thing to watch Stallone and Banderas. You're going to have a good time doing that. And they do some fun stuff,
but they like, definitely
but the potential of this movie is like off the charts given the talent involved. And it's just like, damn, I wish they'd get like another crack at this because it would have been nice to see like a different version of this movie in another universe.
Oh God. Yes. Yeah.
Also, I have to wonder this. So here's the other thing. Assassins is really the movie that I guess would have made his appearance in Expendables 3 possible. I mean, I think they're both in Spy Kids 3D, but
they are. Yes, they are in Spy Kids 3D.
But I would have to assume Assassins is like for like when Expendables 3 came out, people were like, oh, there's the connect, you know, they were in that movie in 1995 together.
Right.
So that's cool. You know, that makes Expendables 3 maybe a little more enjoyable to have like now seen their original connection in the genre.
Yeah, and I'm definitely glad I saw this movie. Like I liked enough of the movie to like it was a pretty solid, it was a 6 out of 10. Like it was a solid action movie. But it didn't have anything. I would say like Antonio Banderas is like definitely the draw of this movie. Like he's like easily the best part of the movie. You know, it didn't have, you know, a super ridiculous premise like sudden death with Jean-Claude Van Damme. It wasn't, you know, a continuation of the Die Hard saga. And we still have another Die Hard movie to do. And I love Die Hard with a Vengeance. But that's an action movie that's made a couple years before this one, where it does everything right. It takes a big city, a larger-than-life city, and makes it feel like this, like almost like claustrophobic, like location, similar to the other Die Hards, where he's actually stuck in, you know, the Nakatomi Plaza, the airport. So that does this version really well. But yeah, this movie is just too long, and it a lot of it doesn't make sense. And I feel like, I think it's all because of what happened with the script, why there's these weird pieces that don't make sense, why there's nothing explained about the disc. But yeah, I don't know. I just keep thinking about like, if this movie was made now, how they would do certain elements. So like one of the examples is when they're in Puerto Rico, it's Dia de los Muertos. So it's a day of the dead, like the night before everything happens. You would have so much cool, like crazy imagery, like you had in a Spectre James Bond movie, the very beginning.
Spectre,
like that super awesome Day of the Dead sequence. Like you'd have stuff like that where like they'd be in costumes and like you could, like, or Antonio Banderas would be just stalking them. And you're just like super, you have this cool like thriller aspect to it. You would have a side character who was his Stallone's hacker, who would be like his comedic relief, who maybe he turns on him. And like, that's actually the guy who sets him up. Like, that's interesting. But you'd have this funny side character throughout until he met Julianne Moore's character, kind of helping give a little bit of life to Stallone, because that's like one of the things he's not super great at. He'd never been really great comedically like, you know, Arnold was. So there's a lot of things now if this movie was made, I think it'd just be a whole lot better.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think too, like, you know, it's, I just don't like buy, I just don't want to, I don't buy him being a hitman who wants out very much. And nor do I find that to be exciting. I think that, like, I'm not really given anything that, like, connects me to that, where you get, like, some random black and white flashback sequences, but, like,
I hated it so much.
Which, like, you know, but I'm not connected. I'm like, who's this guy? Like, who's, right. And who's Nikolai? Like, what is that? I don't, you know.
Also, oh, okay, it was, like, years prior. That wasn't even, like, right, this just happened.
So clearly he wasn't that torn up about it, because he was still doing the work for 15 years, even though, exactly, I have to question, like, how does he not know who he's talking to, like, in his little internet server thing? So I guess it's just like, that's a strange route to take the character, when you could easily have just made it like, I don't know, he's the best, and but, like, now somebody's trying to kill him, and it's just like, you could just leave it at that. I'm not totally hung up on it. It's just like, it doesn't work for me. But then also there's, like, a really cool sequence in the middle of the one of the 400 action sequence or set pieces, where he's, like, riding this, like above ground subway train. And
the monorail thing. Yeah.
The monorail. And he is doing like a drop off with what he thinks is the disc with somebody. And there he gets, like, a briefcase back. And that could have been a much more, like, active set piece, where you could have done a lot on the monorail. That would have been really cool. He does this, like, jump off the monorail, which you're just kind of like, nobody's even chasing him. He just, like, jumps off for some reason.
He opens the door of the monorail while it's moving at, like, 50 miles per hour. It's like a Disney ride, essentially.
But nobody's even, like, chasing him. Yeah, nobody's. There's not a reason to do it. They just needed to do something to end the scene. And so he jumps, and you're like, okay, whatever. Then he gets in the car, and he's like, got my money. And then it, like, makes, like, a weird noise on the radio. And he's like, oh, no, stop. And he throws the briefcase into the dumpster, and it blows up. And it was like, dude, so you thought you just, like, would randomly get, like, $2 million?
Yeah, just is this for your, like, first day being, like, an assassin or in this world? Because, like, I know that, like, that's not, like, you check the money. Again, another missed opportunity. Oh, it could have been Interpol agents, and they start chasing him on the monorail.
Right, like, add some life to this.
Tom Cruise is getting on top of that monorail and having a fight sequence and jumping off that monorail to some kind of, like, helicopter that Julianne Moore is piloting. And then he gets out of there. And then they have weird sex while he, like, doesn't know how to drink a beer and smiles at her.
Yeah, right. It's a very, like, yeah, right, like, PG sex.
Yes, where he's, like, biting her chin. Chin. And you're just, yeah, like, does he know that's not her mouth?
I don't. Yeah. After seeing Top Gun, I could do without ever seeing him. Even when I see Rebecca Ferguson, like, hugging him in the Mission Impossible trailers, I'm like, this doesn't seem right. No. I can't. Tom Cruise should not be doing intimacy. I don't like it.
Never. No, just be a robot. It's fine. We just need you to be an action robot who runs.
That's. But that was what you were saying about Mission Impossible, was, like, you don't even care anymore, like, what it is that they're going after, but they always give you what it is. Like, you get just enough, right? You know, you're like, okay, yeah, great. Yeah. This stops this. Perfect.
You get the perfect setup where it's like the mission debriefing. He puts on his little headphones. It's like, should you choose to accept this? Funnily enough, I was watching a montage of every should you choose to accept from the Mission Impossible movie series yesterday on YouTube. But that's a great device, because it's immediately like the stakes are high. You clearly know what they are. You might not know who all the bad guy, the syndicate, all those bullshit names, whatever they are.
There's always some group more powerful than the last.
Right, right. And it doesn't matter. But I just know, hey, there's a code he has to get. There's a warhead he needs to defuse. And, like, that's very important.
Right. That's really all I need. I mean,
yeah,
there's not much more that you have to do than just get me on board initially. And you can take it from there. But
yeah. And I like your point though about, cause yeah, I didn't really think about that. Like, why is he just wanting to be out? And like, I don't know why, cause they'd already done this. This isn't even like a John Wick thing for the first time that's ever been done. This was like a big thing in the '80s. Just have his wife get blown up, like MacGruber style. And then he's just like, right. He's like, I'm gonna like, I had retired. They let me out. And it makes sense. I mean, it's his old boss or his old mentor. He's coming back because he's like, how dare you? You're not out. And he's like, okay, I'm going to find out who did this. And then I'm retired. And so that makes sense because then his whole reason for doing this, it's not even a mission to earn, you know, some retirement cash. It's to like avenge his wife. And so then he can just like be done with it, settle all scores. But instead it's just like, you know, this set seems like a good time to retire.
Well, that's actually a good point. If he's been so he's been doing this at least 15 years, going back to the guy he kills. Right. Every contract in this movie is like $2 million or more, and then he demands like $20 million for the other, which he gets.
Yes.
Like yeah, he fucking gets it at the end. So what did he do? So you can't tell me that he wasn't making like pretty damn good money beforehand. Why did this have to be the last job?
Super low overhead. You don't see a huge house that he goes to ever, where you got to think what, maybe he's doing five missions a year at $2 million a pop at minimum. But it seems like these are like pretty quick little like $2 million, $1 million dollar missions. A few days and then he's like on to the next thing. So he probably, has made at least $150 million doing this and it's all cash. So like, I don't know what this dude's doing with his money.
Yeah. You just don't like, you really have no idea what is driving him to want to quit. I mean, I know at the beginning he like kills a guy that he knows in a swamp, but you also like don't know who that is. You're just like, that's just some guy.
Exactly. And you don't care.
It's like, okay, he's like a disillusioned hitman, I guess, you know. But yeah, there's not much as an audience that you can like grab onto to say like, oh, okay, ooh, this is cool. Like, people laugh about John Wick. But like, that was a pretty compelling. I mean, who wouldn't want to go on a murderous rampage if somebody killed your dog? So that was maybe tongue in cheek a little bit, but it sure as shit works. So yeah,
you immediately learn in that movie how fierce John Wick is, because then the dad calls and then he brings the son over, right. And I don't approve of violence, obviously, toward your child. But in this instance, it's super effective. He keeps punching his kid in the stomach saying, no, this is the dude, like this is the boogeyman you called to kill the bad people. The bodies he laid built the empire that we now have. And it's just like, oh, so this is like literally the best of the best. And then you see
Baba Yaga.
And then you don't ever get a sense of how good Stallone is.
Right. Like, right.
Show me what a good assassin he is, because all you get is just like he kills an old guy walking out of a bank and you're like, okay, good shot again.
Yeah, he's just like a sad sack the whole time. I don't want to see that shit. I want to see Sylvester Stallone like in that graveyard scene, like inexplicably pick a tombstone out of the ground and like use it to guard like as a shield as he's like walking towards Antonio Banderas.
Slams on
like
someone's throat. Yeah.
And like breaks it over a dude's head. Like I have to get moments like that. The most memorable.
He says like rest in peace or something and like walks away.
Yeah. The most memorable thing I got was the scene with Banderas when he's looking on the computer, when he gets the contract that is Robert Rath as the mark, where he's like, where he bites his, his finger. Like, that's the most memorable scene. And it's like, that's fine, because that's a great little moment. But
I think you have to zoom in. He has to, like, double click to make sure it's him. And it's like, it's clearly Sylvester Stallone. Like, we know who this is.
Yeah, just, it's fine. I get it. That's not a problem. And, well, it was 1995, so it was like, you know, the most pixelated image you've ever seen in your life. So,
oh, it's, it was really, really bad black and white. I think Stallone, I honestly think the best Stallone was when he was just like hamming it up, sitting in the bank, just enjoying himself, where he was he loved it.
He probably loved it, because they probably filmed that whole sequence for like a week, and he was just chilling.
Right. Yeah, just sitting in this comfortable chair. We'll bring you beverages. And, like, he seemed so happy.
Well, like you said, this falls in the range of it being a paycheck film for Stallone. So the more he could just kind of chill, the better for him.
I'm very excited, because I don't know how I forgot about Desperado, but this movie makes me want to do Desperado very badly, and that movie is amazing.
Guess what? We can do Desperado soon, my friend.
Yes.
But yeah, so that's Assassins. I don't know. It just feels like a movie of missed opportunity. That's just kind of like, you hate to see ones like this that like have so much potential that's like part of Stallone's thing. And then that's partly why like he went and did like the Expendables was, I almost feel like it was a chance to like do over some of these types of movies that he like biffed the first time around. Cause like,
I agree. Yeah. He's done some good stuff like late in his career where it's like, this is now there's better capabilities, much better, you know, fight choreography. So like I appreciate what he's done the last, you know, 10 to 15 years of his career.
Yeah. And it's like, it's tough too, because you think of that era of like the stars, they weren't doing like all sorts of crossover movies where it would be ever. Like, I mean, Stallone and Schwarzenegger never did anything together. And you kind of like think like it's a kind of a rarity that you get. I mean, clearly it was a rarity because they've only done really one. I mean, Spy Kids, whatever. But like they really only did one movie together, Banderas and Stallone. So it's not like these guys, these big stars, action stars especially, were like making these movies together back in the day. So
exactly,
this is that rare chance, and it sucks that they biffed it.
You're right. I am very excited though when I look at. I know Stallone's like very up there in age, but I, you know, just in the last 10 years, I know he was in the most recent Guardians of the Galaxy. He was in Rambo Last Blood, which I actually really dug. He's in that Tulsa King show, which I kind of want to watch. My dad really likes it. Escape Plan was really good. I really liked that movie.
Yeah,
he was in the Creed. The Creed movies were great. And then he's done Expendables. He's done several Expendable movies. Like, I mean, that's pretty impressive for a dude who there was, you know, once you got to the early 2000s, started to become like pretty irrelevant. Action movies were way different than during his prime. And like, it's pretty cool how he came back and kind of reinvented himself, but also like went back to the things he was really known for, but did a really cool like modern version of them.
Yeah. Oh, don't get me wrong. I love Stallone. Don't get me wrong. He's made his fair share.
We've talked about that.
Yeah, he's made his fair share of clunkers, but like the dude's had fantastic career, and I've loved his late career stuff. I think I think this is just one of those ones where it would have been nice if it had like landed differently. There's stuff to like. You get lots of young you get some young talent in like Banderas and Moore. You get like it's another Richard Donner film. You get Stallone. You get to see young Wachowski stuff. So there's a lot to like about it. But yeah, you know, it would be cool to get another Expendables, by the way.
I would dig that for sure.
I would take one more.
With The Rock and John Cena.
Dude, oh my fuck. I'm like dying to get a movie where The Rock puts his ego aside and you get like the Dave Bautista, John Cena, and The Rock in a movie together. Like, I want like an old school 80s action, just buff as shit guys.
Well, you also talked about them doing a remake of Three Men and a Baby, which I like. I'm obsessed with that idea.
I want that first. I need that movie first.
I want a $200 million budget just to cover their salaries of that movie.
Oh, I think that'd be incredible. I hope we just, we got to keep that dream alive. We got to keep talking about that movie.
Oh, it'd be great.
I don't know if I want that movie more or Cliffhanger 2 that you and I have pitched around with Jackie Chan and Stallone. We've got some winners. Oh, my God.
Dude, but... but what if you had, like, Tom Selleck, Ted Danson, and Steve Guttenberg were the fathers of those guys? Like, Ted Danson is like Batista's father, and
dude,
like,
I like this.
Is Cena's father, and Tom
but
Selleck
I like this
is,
idea I like this idea that audiences would be like losing their shit for a Lego sequel where like they bring back Steve Guttenberg and like in like the trailer there's like this like the like you know like the big reveal like you know with like those like voiceovers you hear from like The Force Awakens or the Indiana Jones Dial of Destiny where it's like, you know, that it's like, oh my God, the voice. And they're doing like this like serious voiceover and you see their shadows, the three shadows. Well, and
the,
it's like
in the teaser, it would be like Dad, we need you. And it's like, oh my God, wait, who's his dad? Yeah. And then, in the trailer, it's revealed, oh my God, they're there to help them raise the baby because they've also been through this.
Yes,
I mean, the idea of Steve Guttenberg somehow being the father of either Batista or John Cena.
Right, yeah, right.
Because I think,
or any Ted of them Danson, being The Rock's father.
Oh yeah. Oh, Tom Selleck would probably have to have married a woman of like who was like
Polynesian. Yes, right. Yeah.
But I love. Right. I think Ted Danson would be perfect to be Batista's father because how funny Batista is. Like they could play off each other super well.
That actually would be like, I would actually just want like, this is why I just like hate the death of comedies. Is that like I would actually just love a comedy where Ted Danson was Batista's father and they just did some really cool like that father son road trip movie.
That'd be amazing. Yes,
like that's fantastic. I'd kill for that. I think Bautista's like begging to be in stuff like that. And I'm hoping that he gets enough juice where like people start like listening to him.
He's getting there. Yeah, that'd be sweet.
You know, let him, I don't know. We've talked about this 10 billion times, but it's funny because like, it's almost, because like Schwarzenegger and Stallone, they were always taking chances in their career. And it's funny because like, they always wanted to take chances and they got the opportunity to do so, but it would have been like amazing for those two to be like in today's action genre landscape because of the way people take it so seriously. And then it's like guys like The Rock, really just The Rock, take like no chances beyond the genre. And it's just like, it's funny to see it flipped a little bit. I know Bautista and Cena got to work together. I got to see something because they both clearly want to do things in the vein of like a Stallone and Schwarzenegger where it's like, I want to take on fun projects. So
yeah,
I would kill.
Those two.
I
love those two.
I mean, I'd kill to see them in something together. It'd be fantastic. But maybe you do something where, dude, or you do one where Stallone plays their dad. And he's like, those are like his two giant sons.
Or Arnold plays the father. Yeah. Or they're rivals. Stallone and Arnold were rivals growing up.
And like those are their sons who are rivals now.
Okay, dude, what about this? Stallone and Arnold were high school rivals and their sons are seniors in high school, but played by Batista and Cena, who are playing high school kids, and they are rivals.
100% yes. Yeah. And there has to be obviously clearly no comment on that whatsoever. It's just bought in that those are kids.
They're just around. Yes.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I'm in for that. Oh my God. There's so much you could do. That movie would make, I mean, I don't know how you couldn't look at that and be like, this movie would make $300 million.
Yeah, we can make this movie for $50 million, primarily budgeted for salaries, because it's going to just be a high school comedy and it's just going to make a shitload of money.
Especially if you got you got some people like Greg Mottola would be great behind somebody who understands how to make a comedy.
Right.
And if you got Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg to write the script,
Yes. Bill Hader could direct it and can have some dark elements to it. He's a fantastic director.
I do wonder what he'll be doing after Barry.
He's going to win an Oscar in 5 years for writing or directing.
Yeah. I need to finish Barry after Succession, but
yeah, me too.
I'm very excited for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'd say that's probably it for Assassins, since we spent most of the last 10 minutes talking about our fun pitches. So
perfect.
That might be the last we have to say about this. But it was fun. I think this was our first Richard Donner film, which is cool because he did a lot. I mean, he did quite a bit. I mean, so much that we could mention Superman and the Goonies and Lethal Weapon, Scrooged, Lethal Weapon 2. He did Lethal Weapon, Scrooged, and Lethal Weapon 2 in a span of 2 years. So he really is one of the greats. And, I think this is just one of those movies where it just maybe just didn't come together fully. But there's certainly enough to like here to give it a shot. But you may end up having to pay $9 for it to rent it 3 times. So that might happen because this is tough to sit through in one sitting. So you might forget your 48-hour window and get screwed and rent it 3 or 4 times.
It's true.
But I think other than that, look, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. We can't all hit home runs on this podcast. Sometimes we're going to hit a few singles. And Assassins is just us grinding out an at bat to get on base.
Yeah.
And, gets us to the next movie. So that's kind of how this one feels. But plenty to like, tons of names attached, and it's Stallone. So, and Banderas being wild, and it's the GIF's origin. So if that doesn't get you jazzed up, I don't know what will. But aside from that, please, like I said, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. And catch us on social at Revenge of 90s Pod, and we'll catch you guys next time.